We applaud you and your excellent taste for the finer things in life. And now, for your listening pleasure, it's Rockland World Radio.
I'm Judy Martin, and this is the MMZ Featured Artist Hour. In this edition, we're going to speak with the musician Mark Marshall. He's just released his debut album. It's called New Eye. Mark composed and performed all the tracks, along with engineering and producing the entire album. We'll speak with him about the writing and recording of New Eye and dive into his long history in media and radio. Stick around for Mark Marshall and hear some cuts from his debut album, New Eye. I'm Judy Martin. This is the MMZ Featured Artist Hour, and we're speaking with Mark Marshall, musician Mark Marshall, and he has a debut album. It is called New Eye, and I'm looking at the cover here, and there's a flame coming out of your eye. What is this about? What is New Eye?
It's a very painful picture to take, you know, between the lighting.
That's your eye there.
Yeah, it represents, the album represents a change, a life change, and the picture is representative of that. New Eye, I guess, refers to looking at things through a new eye.
Right, new perspectives.
Yep.
Okay, maybe even a new you on some level, but...
Oh, no, very, very much so, very much so. And in terms of the writing, it didn't start out to be that. The album sort of, I've worked on the album for over 2 years. And it started out just being this hodgepodge of songs, mm-hmm. and it eventually turned into something chronological that sort of documents that.
Let's digress just for a moment. Mm-hmm. Let's know a little bit more about Mark Marshall.
Okay.
How old are you, Mark?
45.
45. Yep. So you've been playing and writing music for many, many years.
Yeah, many years.
And you come from a long history of that. So how about just a little taste of where you came from?
Okay. My father was a voiceover guy in New York, voiceovers, character voices, singer, whistler, sort of a vocal jack of all trades. I would say probably half the people listening, anybody who's over the age of like 35 had either seen him or actually over the age of 30 had either seen him or heard his voice on radio or on television. And so I grew up, in a family that loved music. Actually, my mother played more music in the house than my dad did. But everybody had an inherent love of music.
What did you play and what did you sing? What was it like being baby Mark?
Okay, my first record, the first single that I ever had was See You in September by The Happenings when I was 4 years old, and I had a plastic drum set, and I used to sit on the living room floor and play it over and over and over again and play drums to it. That was my first record. After that, later on, it became, I started playing piano when I was probably 5 or 6.
And what about training, along those lines?
I took piano lessons when I was very, very, very young, like 5. But they didn't last more than a year and a half, and after that, no formal training at all year.
So as the years went on, I guess you taught yourself quite mm-hmm. a bit
yep.
about music and,
yep.
and reading and writing music. And
don't read or write.
You don't read
at
or write
all.
Music?
Completely
really?
By ear. Yeah.
So I'm looking at an album here, and mm-hmm. You just kind of somehow creatively got the juices flowing so that you could master this?
Yeah.
I mean, I've seen your studio, and it looks like a typical recording studio.
Right. Right. Well, and that's taken, it took a long time to get there. For years and years and years, I banged around with a two-track tape recorder where I would record on the left-hand side, and then I would send that over to the right-hand side and add one instrument to it, and then send it back over to the left-hand side, you know, because I was a kid and didn't have equipment. But what it taught me was, because I had grown up, that's the other thing I should say, is that I grew up listening to WABC radio in the early 60s when they would play, I mean, I would say, like, late 60s. You could turn on something like WABC and you could hear Led Zeppelin and Diana Ross and the Supremes and the Carpenters in the same hour. It was a very eclectic mix, but it was the best of hit records.
747 coming out of the sky. Won't you take me down to Memphis on a midnight ride? I won't move. Hey, little traveling band. Yeah. Well, I'm flying across the land and I'm trying to get a hand. I said, hey, little traveling band. Listen to the radio. Talking about the last show, someone got excited and it caused the state militia. I won't move. Hey, little traveling man. Oh, yeah. Well, I'm flying across the land and I'm trying to get a hand. I said, hey, little traveling. Night with your husband and your father, won't you get me to the rap? I won't move. Hey, little traveling man. Oh, yeah. Well, I'm flying across the land and I'm trying to get a hand. I said, hey, little traveling man. One more time. Coming out of the sky, won't you give me Dr. Memphis on a midnight ride? I won't move. Hey, little traveling man. Oh, yeah. Well, I'm flying across the land and I'm trying to get a hand. I'm flying across the land, I'm trying to get a hand. Tell me.
So I got that sensibility very early on in listening to it. So between that and then having to go through this painstaking process when I first started recording of having to decide ahead of time every instrument that I was going to record before I ever started recording it, it sort of taught me a process of recording. Now having multi-track and you know MIDI instruments and all that, it's given me the opportunity to be able to compose in the studio more. I'll come up with a keyboard riff, or I'll come up with a bass riff, or a guitar riff, or a drum riff, whatever it happens to be. And I'll start building on it, and I'll come up with a chord pattern that feels like a verse to me, and then I'll say, okay, well now let me come up with a chord pattern that counters that as a chorus. And so I'll repeat them, and I'll put in a B section. Now I have no words yet, and I have no melody yet, but it's a way of coming up with the structure in which a song ends up fitting.
Is that your creative process? Is that how you work? I mean, as a rule,
there's no rule. Most of the time, if I had to do it from a percentage perspective, most of the time that's how it ends up taking place. But there are times where, like the song for Sky on the album, I literally sat with a guitar and wrote it. I don't do that as often as I do the other studio thing. But for me, that's part of the whole writing process is, and sometimes the song is already melody and lyrics are in my head, and I go in and do all that musical stuff in the studio, and sometimes there is no song in my head. And that instrumental can sit there for a year, 2 years, and then all of a sudden, there'll come a point where I come up with these words. There may have been melody lines running in my head for that music for the past 6 months, but nothing lyrical. Lyrics are the tough part for me. That's the tough part for me.
It's interesting to dive into, you know, your creative process, right, as a musician, because I'm sure people listening to this are just kind of amazed with your process. And certainly, you've been influenced. So if we go back now, you know, we take a look at the 60s and 70s. We're kind of, you know, coming along here.
Right.
Who were your greatest influences, whether they be musicians or writers or groups?
Yeah, man, that's tough. It's because, you know, it's.
I could say,
when I was very young, my mother would play, the Beatles, Abbey Road, and James Taylor, and Paul Simon, and Joni Mitchell, Courtney Spark.
Oh, great, so
sure.
Contemporary.
Yeah, but then a little bit later, I found I was the ripe old age of what, 11 or 12. I found David Bowie's Ziggy Stardust and the Spiders from Mars. And that album just absolutely knocked me on my ass. I had never really heard really powerful rock and roll. And that album just literally, I totally found it as a fluke. I found this one song that just floored me, and it completely changed my ears. And it opened me to an entirely different, I don't know, just a different genre. It's what got me listening to rock and roll.
Would you say that you even began composing at that ripe old age of 11? Thoughts or chords melodies in your
Sure, head? Because at that point I had already been, I mean, I'd been banging around on a piano for a long time, I mean, it's a long time, at 11, right? No, but I'd been playing piano for a long time, again, just by ear. But I'd already done things. I started playing with little riffs and playing with chords and you know, not going, hey, look, here's the new song I wrote. I wasn't quite that disciplined about it. I don't think I really started writing songs till the ripe old age of, I don't know, 14 or 15. But in terms of other influences, there's so many of them. Pink Floyd, Queen, again, Joni Mitchell, Bebop Deluxe, who nobody knows who they are, but trust me, they're worth listening to. The list is longer than I can. You know, every single time I name somebody, I go, man, there's five people that I left out. Bowie's been a constant influence because there's somebody who's, I mean, you can go buy five different Bowie albums, and they are all so entirely different that you play them for somebody who doesn't know his stuff, and they kind of look at you like, you can't tell me this is the same artist, you know, because they really, and that's, this has been an issue with this album, I don't do, there are some artists that sit down and go, okay, I'm going to do, a 50-style rock and roll album. I don't do that. You know, I write songs, and they fit together the ways that they fit together, and especially in this age of albums that are so packaged and that are so targeted and so focused and mass market driven, that people get so accustomed to a product in a CD case. That's not what I do. You know, I'll write a song that is, you know, go back and listen to the White Album, you know. There's everything from like the sweetest ballads to the nastiest kind of rock and roll songs on that album, you know, and yet people went, yeah, that's the Beatles.
New Eye, if you were to put it in a genre, mm-hmm. for you, anyway, as a musician, what is it? I mean, I've listened to the songs, and they're kind of all over the place in the sense that there's, you know, that song,
there's
melodic.
There's that horrible indie artist where it's eclectic. It's
and
an eclectic
hard rock and
mix.
Roll and things of that nature.
Yeah, so. And I think that's part of the challenge in this has been that I think it's at least vocally, well, there are some exceptions, but I think at least vocally it's pretty apparent that it's the same artist from song to song.
Mm-hmm. It's pretty diverse, though.
Oh, no, it is. Really, it's very diverse. And that's it's been a real challenge trying to make it something coherent. And I have to say, honestly, I mean, I think that's, you know, even 6 months ago, this album was a real grind. I mean, I knew I was supposed to make it. That's a whole other story. But it was this very, it was kind of a hodgepodge of songs. And one track, This Town, which is a song that I wrote 25 years ago, and had literally just thought, I just forgot about it. It's a very short song. It's a minute and 30 second song. And I wrote it in a pretty jaded time in my life. And I was working on it. I had a little list of songs on my computer. And I was looking at them going, okay, I have to do this. I have to fix this song. I have these lyrics, blah, blah, blah. And I was making this list of songs that needed to be fixed up and stuff for the album. And all of a sudden, I don't know where it came from, but out of the blue, this song came into my, I thought of it and I went, and when I thought of that song, which is very simple, it's just a piano and a little tiny bit of string work and one vocal, all of a sudden the entire album was chronological. That it gave a purpose to it. And I started looking at all the songs and realizing that nearly every song on the album represents a part of my life. And so once this song cut, and I had thought of it a year before about making it chronological, and I went, nah, the songs are too disparate, there's no way. But when that song came, all of a sudden, he just threw the entire album into order.
Came here to this town when you were very small. But now you feel old, you're not quite as sold on the lights and all. You walk through, people look at you, and you don't wonder why anymore. Now you're here in this town, and it seems very small. Well, you don't wonder why anymore.
I'd like to ask you about the album, actually, mm-hmm. because it has suddenly appeared, mm-hmm. and you are 45,
yep.
right? 45. Mm-hmm. So it's taken you this long to, mm-hmm. I guess, you know, by rock and roll standards, I don't want to say you're a late bloomer,
yeah,
but...
Yeah, I'm a very late bloomer.
For a debut album, it's...
Yes. You're absolutely right.
It's a little onward.
Yeah, well, I mean, look, you know, I've been doing this stuff for a long time.
And something clearly happened within you.
Oh, yeah. No, absolutely.
That brought you to this place.
So absolutely.
I think maybe that's what I'm asking you first is, you know, what brought you to this new eye, this new perspective,
right.
this idea within yourself
Man,
that it was time to move forward?
It's been a trip. There are a whole series of events, and a lot of them are documented in the album. But I have to say, just as a precursor to it, that I've been doing this for a long time, and I've been doing it for other people. I've been on other people's albums. I've done video shoots for other people. I've been doing that for a long time. I never really did it for myself. I mean, the whole time I was recording and the whole time I was writing, and that's it. But in terms of putting it out there, no, I didn't. And I don't think that I was ready to. And I think there are a lot of reasons for that. But there were a series of events that I can't say that one particular event went, okay, now you have to make an album. I mean, it's like anything else. We go through our life processes. And I went through one where various things happened, everything from divorce to the birth of my son to my father's suicide to questioning a spiritual connection to the universe and to the planet and then getting very clear answers back about that connection, that all of those things as a whole built up to get to the point where this was. This wasn't supposed to happen before now. This album was not supposed to happen before now. You know, I don't look at it as a number. I don't feel 45. I mean, especially in the past month and a half, I feel 17. seriously, because...
So you look at your life as this cathartic process, and then this...
I don't know if it's cathartic, but...
Well, you've had some pretty unusual things. I mean, everyone's got their stuff
yeah.
and their baggage, but mm-hmm. I... you know, you've definitely, you've seen some chaos and you've conquered it. You've moved beyond it. And it had to, I would think, influence you in some way in the writing of this album.
Yeah, in some songs it has. Crossing, definitely.
Mm-hmm. Why don't you tell me about that? Tell me about that song.
Sure. Almost 6 years ago, my father committed suicide by jumping off the Tappan Zee Bridge in broad daylight. And it was, while he had been living in a, he'd been living with some real challenges that he'd taken on himself. I mean, what they were really doesn't matter, but the point is, it was not expected. The family knew that he had his challenges, that he was working through relationship issues and substance issues and all kinds of stuff. They were his issues to deal with. No one expected it. No one. And literally, 3 o'clock in the afternoon, he drove up to the middle of the Tappan Zee, stopped in the middle of the bridge, got out of his car and jumped. I mean, to the horrified onlookers. And I'm the only, out of all of my siblings, I'm the only one who lives close. So when he did it, they brought his car to Tarrytown, to the Thruway Authority building on the other side of the bridge. And I went 2 days later, and I got into his car, and I drove it back across the bridge. So there I was in his seat on the bridge. And what a surreal experience that was. But how, in a way, liberating it was, because none of my siblings, they were all in disparate places. So they had to hear over the telephone. And, and as anybody knows who has suicide in the family, is particularly if somebody didn't leave you a big long note and say, this is why I'm going. And even if they did, usually they're not explaining enough. You, as the survivors of it, are left with nothing but questions, And so, that song not only represents one particular viewpoint that I've had about it since it happened, because your viewpoint changes as you heal and as you grow and as you learn more and as you accept more, but it not only describes having to go and get the car and drive it back across the bridge, but also the fact that you're left with questions that will never be answered. The other thing, too, is it's important about a lot of the songs on the album, from both an emotional standpoint and from a songwriting standpoint, is that they're snapshots in time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how I've grown and how I've changed and how I relate to that incident are vastly different than the attitude that's in that song. But it just happens to be where I was at that point where I wrote it, you know.
Well, what about some of the other songs here? Traveling Band, This Town, Something to Believe In. I hate to ask you, but...
Ask me anything you want.
Do you have a favorite song on the album? Or something you resonate with, maybe more than the other ones?
Well, and that's the other thing, too. I mean, there are different songs that there are songs that I love for different reasons. Angelina is... That song is kind of close to me because that was actually that song happened as a result of a waking dream. That was a very, very, very profound dream. And for those who've already seen the video, then they already know they've seen the whole story because the video tells the story of the song. But I had a very intense waking dream. It's another mushy Mark thing. I woke up the next morning after having that dream with the most profound sense of loss I had ever had in my life, and I wept for literally almost an entire day and just sat there with this pad going and writing these words down on a pad. That became the song. And what's interesting is that song, that weekend, which was May of 2005, right in Nyack on Main Street, that weekend was what started this album, was that waking dream.
So it's a pretty powerful song for you then,
yeah,
as an artist. Well,
yeah.
Tell me about the song.
Yeah, I had this very intense dream. I had this very intense dream and woke up and wanted to go back into the dream. And I don't want to tell the whole story because I don't want to ruin it. You have to listen to the song to hear it. But I spent the entire rest of the night trying to go back into the dream and could not get back into the dream to where I wanted to. And there you go.
Okay, we don't want to give that because it is a video. So.
It is. Well, the song is... Look, I love videos and I love film. I'm a huge fan of film. But I also think that songs need to be able to stand on their own. And I think Angelina does. I think Angelina is. And Angelina represents everything that I was talking about before, about 1960s radio and about, you know, people... There are people who actually remember them who laugh when you say the Carpenters. Go back and listen to the Carpenters. Even more so, go back and look at the record charts, and you see how many top 10 records they had in a row, because they were brilliant at crafting. I mean, they had the best writers, but they were brilliant at crafting records. And to me, I described when I first got finished with Angelina, and I would tell people, I finished this song, and they would ask me, you know, and I would say, it's a 60s pop song through a Mark filter. Because to me, it really is. It's like a 60s pop song.
We were laughing and the kisses turned so sweet that it nearly broke. You're listening to Rockland World Radio, heard around the world. Hence, Rockland World Radio.
What do you do to get in the mood? Now, the reason I ask this is because, as a musician, what is your process? I mean, what is your process when you sit down? Or is it just being inspired in the moment?
Sometimes it's very much, and this is why songwriting can be very difficult for me. It's one thing to do notes, there'll be times where I just get a riff in my head and I go, I'm just going to go record that or sequence it. For those of you who don't know what sequencing is, it's not actually recording audio. It's just sort of taking musical notes from a computer keyboard and recording them into a computer and being able to edit them and stuff later on. And sometimes it's as simple as that. I'll just come up with a riff and it's, there are other times where it's something deeply felt.
I was going to say, I'm looking at some of these songs and some of the discussion around them. It seems like pain. Something has been a great influence with you in a lot of these songs.
And sure. I want to say that despite what could be construed as a lot of pain, yes, painful experiences, sure. But I think in a lot of ways that when I was young, I just sort of gravitated towards melancholy,
Sound like a real typical musician.
Yeah, right. Oh, yeah, right. But I have to say that I think in a lot of ways that while there's stuff on this album that is heartfelt expression of having gone through pain. I think that songs like Something to Believe In indicate, which is a very specific, and we should talk about that. But that song starts out being angry and unsure and uncertain about the world and but by the same standpoint, in the end, I feel like it comes to a very redeeming place.
The music changes in that as well.
Absolutely,
it gets lighter. But how about a couple of lyrics from that? Can you?
Yeah. The verses are: "Give me some heart, give me some soul. That's all that I was asking, but you left me standing in the cold." And this is exactly what I mean. Now, that's the first half of the first verse. But the chorus is, "Give me something to believe, someone who won't deceive me into thinking that all hope of love is gone," which indicates by its very nature that love is, the hope of love is still there. And then it says, give me love, give me light, give me music, give me truth, and give me heaven, give me something to believe in. And I think it's almost, I don't want to say it's a gospel tune, but there's an aspect of it that feels like that for me.
Funny faces when I tell you that I'm not amused by the way you have been. emotion. Wanna feel it in my soul.
I need it.
Don't want nobody else to try and take control.
I don't want it.
Don't need somebody else to save me or be saved.
I don't need it.
Don't wanna be somebody's master or a slave. And if I'm alone, turn out the light. When you close the door, oh, give me the light.
I mean, even Angelina, which is, you know, it's an aching.
I cannot get that song out of my head.
Yeah, it took me a while to get it out of my head too.
Angelina.
Yeah, but the thing is, if you think about it, in the end, yeah, it's just sort of a pop song, but it's kind of a sad love song, you know, a love unrequited kind of song. But it's still there's still something joyous about it to me.
There is, and it also hangs on you.
Yeah.
It hangs in your mind and in your heart.
Like a cheap shoot. Yes, it does. No, it does. Absolutely. It does. I love that song. It's a great song.
And Want to Be There for You. That's another cut on the album.
Yeah, I wrote that for my son, Sky.
Tell me about your son. A lot of people want to know about your son.
He's just turned 10, and he's wonderful. He's bright and beautiful and artistic. And
is he a musician?
No. No, he's more of an artist than he is a musician. I mean, look, you know, I'm very hesitant to go trying to apply things to, you know, like, okay, I play instruments, therefore you must play instruments. I would rather be an influence for him and be an example and say, look, you know, because I do other stuff besides music. I do digital art and blah, 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 blah. I would rather give him the opportunity and say, here's the options that are available to you. And the song reflects this too. Here's the options that are available to you. Let me foster that however I can, whichever one resonates with you. So the idea behind the song was dualfold. Was first of all, I started writing these words, which were about, and this doesn't happen very often. I intended when I wrote the song that I wanted to write something, that if Sky heard it in 20 years, whether he be in a difficult place in his life or in a good place in his life, that he could hear it and that something in the words would have a meaning for him, that a helpful meaning for him in his life in 20 years. So when he hears it now, he thinks one thing, and that's the other reason why. The song is 2 minutes and 17 seconds long, and I did that on purpose because when I wrote it, he was 9, and you don't sit a 9-year-old down for a 5-minute song. 2 minutes was perfect.
And though we spent most of our time far apart, you should know you are always in my heart. And if I could, I would be with you all the time. I hope you're getting through okay, but I wanna be there for you. Now I don't want to make you into someone else. Oh, but I do want to give you from myself the most I can to help your life become worthwhile. And if I can, I'll make you smile. But I wanna be there. Anyway, you won't.
Is it a rebirthing for you, or is it a birthing for you of the new Mark Marshall? I see new, and I can't help but ask that question. You know,
yeah,
is it really new, or is it really?
I think the process of making the album was more of a birth than bringing the album out. You know, and yeah, man, it was a really long process of labor before birth. 43 years.
What about seeing your name? I'm looking at the album. Okay,
yep.
Here it is. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. There's a picture of your eye with a mm-hmm. flame coming out
right.
of it. So, what is that? Look at that. That's
mm-hmm.
you.
Yeah.
That's a flame coming out of your eye.
Yeah, it is.
You know, what is this to you? What is this album to you?
If I had to put it in a nutshell, I would say it's... I want to separate the cover from the album itself. I mean, the album is a journey. You know, the name indicates that it's, you know, that it's looking through a different eye, but I think part of what the album is about having made that journey. And yes, at the tail end of that journey, there has been this blooming. There has been this, what started this album, was very much a blooming and very much a denouement and very much a spiritual awakening too. Because of the fact that I had gotten to a point where I'd gone through so much in my life, with the culmination being, you know, what happened with my dad. And I got to the point where I was surrounded by all these very spiritual people. People who channeled and people who, I mean, really, and people who I trusted and people who I respected, who said, you know, who talked about connections to the universe and connections to the planet. And I said, you know, I respect you and I trust you and I've known you a long time and I believe all this, but I don't feel it. Right now, what I inherently know for myself is that if I die tomorrow, I'm gone. I have no awareness of a higher self, of a spiritual connection to the universe. I really don't. I believe you, but I don't feel it. And I was actually angry about it. I said to them, you know, look, if in fact, you know, as some people believe that, you know, your soul chooses to inhabit this body and come down to this planet for a round before it goes back, you know, that a certain knowledge of that, of the whole setup, would be very helpful. Because otherwise you get here and you just feel inherently alone. And I feel that it's a real handicap. And somebody, when they designed the system, really screwed up. Well, that was how I felt at that point. And that's actually what Something to Believe In is about. What is specifically about that period of time where I was saying, hey, excuse me, but WTF, man, but, you know, really, really, this is, you know, I want more. I want more.
Did you get more?
Oh, yeah. No, I totally
got
it.
What
did you get? I got a connection.
How?
I got a connection. Well, it started with that dream. It started with that dream that I
what dream? Angelina?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Exactly. It was as a result of that dream and having gone through the experience the next day of being so profoundly affected by it. And here's the thing. It was a dumb dream on the face of it. It was a dumb dream. It was a dumb romantic dream. But the next day, the profound sense of loss I had, I had never felt anything like this before, ever. I really, in the midst of between crying jags and writing lyrics, furiously scrambling lyrics on a piece of paper, I had to ask myself these questions about, wait a minute, this is a dumb effing dream. Why am I, you know, there was something bigger there. And so I started asking questions, and getting answers to them. For myself.
You talking to me, if you grab in the right place, you might land. I'll polish your stone if you do the right thing and you take command. You buried all my love in some other land. And I thank you now for taking me down.
now for taking you.
Mark's going to preach for a minute. If you look around your life, you will find that there are a million things that you are blessed with. People and places and things and experiences. And that if you focus on them, it really does make a tremendous difference. That so much of what we do is focus on what's negative in our lives and what's missing and what other people have and what we don't, and or what we're getting and they're not, as opposed to being thankful for everything and being opposed to nothing. And it's interesting because a friend of mine who does channel called me up one day, a very short story, called me up one day and said, look, I'm really sorry, but so-and-so, this entity who she channels, wants me to call you and give me these. And I'm really busy trying to work, but he insists, he won't shut up. He said, please go get some colored pens and some paper. Okay? And he's going to give you some things that he wants you to write down and put up. Well, so I got these, like, 15 little mantras, for lack of a better term, little sayings that are now pasted up all over my house. And literally, this entity not only had the sayings, but at very specific places where they had to go. Because you do certain things during certain times of the day where you should see this message at that time. So on my door, on the way out, there's a sign right on the door, right below the lock, that says, be opposed to nothing. And there's one on my bathroom mirror that says, you deserve. Because everybody does. Everybody does. And that's goes back to what's in All Too Fast. There's a line. There's enough for everyone. No more poverty mentality. You know, if we believe that there was enough for everyone, then there would be.
I got another one.
Go ahead.
You rock. I have something literally on my mirror
really?
That says, you rock.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah,
I got
no.
that from a girl
yeah.
of mine who's also a musician. Right. But anyway, I didn't mean to get away from that.
No,
but,
that's a really
gratitude. I mean, you're talking about gratitude and really focusing on the positive, and that's, in fact, how you launched the idea of this album. Because if you're talking about Angelina, mm-hmm. and it came to you through this, you know, through a dream and mm-hmm. inspiration, and that really laid the foundation for you.
Mm-hmm.
To do the rest. So Angelina, if you allow me to, brought you to a deeper place somewhere.
Sure. Right?
Some intense
Absolutely.
Place.
Absolutely.
That laid the foundation for an album. Mm-hmm. And you come around now back to gratitude, mm-hmm. it seems.
Sure.
I mean, that seems to be the motto of the album somewhere.
Yeah, I mean, I think gratitude is one way of looking at it. I mean, I also think it's gratitude to me almost sometimes, I mean, as a word, you know, and there's semantics with every word, obviously. Gratitude sometimes feels to me like, you know, oh, something you should be grateful for, like you should bow to it. I guess what I'm saying is it's not about gratitude so much as it's about awareness. It's about awareness.
You seem to be coming from the heart. Do you
yeah.
feel like the way you came at this and the work that you do, kind of, you know, doesn't fit in with today's contemporary approach to what is really popular out there? Does it concern you at all?
I would be lying if I said that it hadn't occurred to me. And of course it does. I mean, look, you know, we can't ignore the fact that there's a market, right? Yes, of course. Wouldn't I love it if it feels? Wouldn't I love it if it's a huge album? Absolutely. But again, that's that. I had to be very clear about not making that a goal and not making that about my awareness. I feel blessed to have it happen. I feel honored to actually have it in one coherent place. To be able to say, you know, I did this and I finished it, and to be able to give somebody else the experience that I've had my whole life of putting on an album. And putting on a pair of headphones or putting it on speakers and sitting down and having a great experience with it and loving it and finding something enjoyable in the music or redeeming in the music or you know, however people find it. So, yeah, I'm aware of it, but no, it doesn't matter.
Okay, so you're not attached to what's next then? That's what you're saying somewhere. You're kinda,
oh, no.
You're putting it out there and you're saying,
I'm
all
not
right,
attached. I'm not attached
go.
At all to mm-hmm. what's next. Not at all. Not at all.
What do you want to see is next? What would you like to see next?
Well, I loved making the video for Angelina, and I'm in the process of scripting a couple more videos from this album. But separate and apart, I mean, and I would love to do film work. I would love to put some music to film. The next album, writing more songs, you know? I mean, there are songs that I was working on right up to when this album came out that I didn't put on the album. They'll be done in 3 or 4 weeks, and so I'm. And plus, the other thing too is I have so many different styles of music. I have a whole bunch of ambient, long form music, and I've had people for years, literally for years, saying you got to make an album of this stuff. So you know, and that would take me all of a couple of weeks because I just have to pull it all together. So maybe that, I don't know, but I'm not. You know, like you said, I'm not married to something. It's what comes next.
Just kind of what makes you.
It's being open to what comes next. You know, everything. I mean, I firmly believe that everything happens for a reason. But I think that, you know, you can try as hard as you can. There's somebody said a long time ago, and I always thought it was great. They said, if you set up an ultimate goal for your life, what happens if you reach it and you're 40? What do you do then? Just, you know, pull the dirt over yourself and die? Because I reached the goal. Now, you know, race is over. No, it's process, man, you know.
It's the journey.
It is totally the journey. It's totally the journey. Absolutely.
All right. Thank you so much for being with us here. We've been speaking here on MMZ with our featured artist of the hour here, Mark Marshall. His debut album is called New Eye. I'm Judy Martin. This is the MMZ Featured Artist Hour. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks very much.
All right.
MMZ Featured Artist Hour. Mark Marshall's album New Eye is available from www.markmarshall.com, where you can also see the Angelina video discussed in the interview. Thanks for listening, and see you next time on the MMZ Featured Artist Hour.